Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. I'm Eric Jansen. Tonight, message of love. Two high school boys fall in love, then grow into adults as they deal with class issues, one's rich, the other's not, and more profoundly with the aftermath of a sporting accident that leaves one of them paralyzed from the waist down. Their tale is told in the novels Every Time I Think of You, which won a Lambda Literary Award in the gay romance category, and its sequel, Message of Love, a finalist this year for the same prize. My guest tonight is the author of these two books and several others. He also writes for and edits the entertainment calendar and the bar tab section of San Francisco's weekly LGBT newspaper, The Bay Area Reporter. Jim Provenzano, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thanks, Eric. It's great to be here.
And, you know, as I usually do with authors, I would love to start off with you reading a passage. So what's a good one to introduce our listeners to Reed and Everett's story?
This is from the first day that Reed and Everett meet, and after bumping into each other in a wintry forest in rural Greensburg, Pennsylvania.
And you're not reading that scene because we can't read that one on the radio.
No, they've already...
But we can say what they've been up to. They've discovered each other in the woods.
And barely have barely spoken. And then Everett just nonchalantly invites him over to his house, which turns out to be the biggest mansion in the rich people section on the other side of the forest in Greensburg, Pennsylvania. So it's a very abrupt kind of encounter, but... It just happens.
Is this a real city, a real town, by the way?
Greensburg is a real town, but I kind of faked the geography a bit with my own hometown in Ohio. But there actually is an area like that. There's a secluded rich. There usually is.
Okay.
But I chose Greensburg and Pennsylvania as much for the practical as the metaphorical aspects of all the greenery and the trees. And it became a character in itself, the setting. So they've just... gone into Everett's house, and the only person that Reed has been introduced to abruptly is their housekeeper, Helen, who, and then they realize they don't even know each other's names. So it's very awkward. They're like eating cookies, and they're just like pretending that they didn't just have sex in the woods.
Okay.
So, and then the Helen offers them cookies, which are ironically in the shape of Christmas trees because it's just after Christmas. Everett pushed forward a plate of cookies in the shape of Christmas trees with green glaze and sprinkled decorations. Trees with icing, he said. Getting the inside reference to our amorous encounter, I nearly coughed up hot chocolate. Everett took another cookie, dipped it in his mug, and ate heartily, his eyes on mine. Reed, he whispered, as if savoring the sound of my name. He's misbehaved more often than not, Helen scolded. Really, I said. Neither replied. Everett merely smiled and slurped from his mug. Thanks, he saluted, nodding toward me to leave with him. I popped the last branch of a tree cookie in my mouth and offered a mumbled thank you. As if to offer me a sort of warning, Helen said to him, but while looking at me, what will you get up to this time? What we got up to over the next several months was a blossoming of my new life, my first attempt at knowing another boy by his gestures, his sound, his taste. I would dare to dive headfirst into another world of clumsy, passionate, and impulsive acts. I would borrow my mother's car to visit Everett's rebellious sister in Pittsburgh. I would secretively drive him into the poorer section of that city where, hooded like a gang member, he would purchase marijuana. I would commit several minor crimes in the service of our almost unstoppable appetite for having sex in unusual places. I would collude with Everett to drive his mother to the point of hysteria. I would nearly ruin my chances for a college scholarship by staying up into the early morning hours with Everett the night before a placement exam. I would connive and conspire, break and enter. I would learn the varying temperature of erratic desire, the caloric output of longing, and the previously undefined and eventually unbearable weight of first love.
Wow. You know, that's funny because I read that book, but it's been a couple of years, and I'd forgotten that there's such a little prelude of what's to come.
Yeah, he kind of. I mean, it's different between like writing in looking back as a narrator or writing as immersive present tense. And I tried to balance it out a little bit, but it is the voice of someone who's remembering this first love.
Mm-hmm. So, in a nutshell, without giving too much away, what's this story about?
And You know, I wrote it and I realized it was a romance, so I put it in that category like the day before the deadline for, you know, a few Lambda and other submissions. It's really about the love between these two boys who have very little in common but collide together and then suddenly realize they really like and love each other. They get along, which I think is the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Everett has a lacrosse accident. Exactly midway through the book, the middle of his spine is broken, and it's about Reed refusing to give up, even though Everett tries to push him away. They're separated. You know, it has a lot of the contrivances of a romance, but I kind of studied that genre, and I tried to work around those cliches and make it honest, and, you know, you still, you know, get tearful, and you like it, and it's sexy, but there's a lot of unusual things that I explored that I hadn't, you know, actually lived. It's one of my most fictional books so mm-hmm. far.
So less autobiographical than previous ones?
Yeah. The one about the bike messenger in New York, the one about the cater waiters were Romana Clay. I don't know the plural, how to pronounce the plural. And Pins was not by autobiographical, but it was based on actual experiences of my wrestling, actual matches that I saw, actual crimes that I read about. Whereas with this, it was very impulsive. It started in January 2011. I had a couple of dreams that basically became chapter 1 and 3 and I think 7. I dream in like little scenes, and I knew that was not me in those dreams. So mm-hmm. I woke up and started writing, thinking, oh, this will be a great little short story. And then it was like, oh no, I'm pregnant. It was like, meaning it's a novel. I really had to keep going. So then I just forced a goal on myself, 500 words a day. By the end of the year, I had it done. And then I had this epilogue at the end where they go to college together, and all my friends who read these near final draft said, that's too long. It's a treatment for a sequel. So I kind of put that aside, cut it out, and left it at a place where it felt done. But then I realized, oh, I have a sequel coming. So that was a whole nother 2 years of work on the sequel.
And when did Message of Love come out?
Message of Love came out in the first day of spring in 2014.
Okay, so it's about a year old. I thought it was newer than that. But,
yeah, in March.
So it had to be published during 2014 to be considered for the Lambda Awards this year, right? And that'll be decided. It'll be announced in
2 weeks. I'm going to go to New York to the second time to the Lammies. And it's fun and thrilling. It's a great way to promote books is the real purpose of it. You know, I mean, I was surprised and excited, and people were hinting that, hey, you know, I bet you're going to win. I'm not a betting man, and I love the other finalists this year. There's even more. They're more diverse voices written by men and women. But it's just fun to go and meet your mentors and your heroes. They're going to honor Rita Mae Brown and John Waters.
Wow.
Gloria Steinem is going to be a speaker.
Okay.
So, you know, you see these hundreds of people who you've admired, you read their works, they've read yours, and you get to meet each other. And, you know, writing is often solitary sport.
Yeah.
And to hang out with people and have a drink and, like, celebrate, you know, it's really fun.
That sounds fantastic. What do you hope readers get out of this? I mean, well, actually, let me just back up a second.
Sure.
You mentioned Pins a minute ago, which is your novel about wrestlers and injuries that happened in the wrestling. Is that right?
Well, yeah. The difference, and I mentioned this before to others, is the difference with Pins and the injuries and the injury that happens in Every Time I Think of You is Pins was very basically an allegory. It's a modern suburban New Jersey version of the story of Saint Sebastian. So there's a finale. There's a big moment where Joey, the young wrestler, the protagonist, is severely injured, and he recovers because he's visited by a saint. Who is a character who dies. So it's very Catholic. It's very metaphorical. Of course, you know he's going to recover or not. But I've had many injuries in my neck specifically, actually wrestling in your collarbone. And in the bike messenger book, Cyclosin, he gets hit by cars. So that happens. It happens in real life. But with Every Time I Think of You, I was very much inspired by all of a sudden, I just saw disabled people really clearly. I had written an article about it in the LGBT community. I had become an avid fan and supporter of Axis Dance in Oakland, who the people I adore. And I remembered seeing a concert and seeing a guy in the street just struggling. And then I saw a guy at the Eagle. And it all just came together. I have to make this happen. And I have to write about this because it's not a metaphor. It's a real thing. Mm-hmm. And it became a lot of homework, a lot of interviewing my friends who use wheelchairs or who have other disabilities, getting it right and accurately, but also not impersonating a disabled person, which is a kind of a really strong and valid critique in other art forms.
Mm-hmm.
So the sequel was even more research because I went to Philadelphia. I realized I wanted to set most of it there. So I went places, studied archives, interviewed people. You know, you have to know the difference between an L4 spinal column injury and, a C4. You know, there's difference in how their bodies react and how they survive. So it was fascinating and disturbing and fulfilling because I got to explore this whole new area by using the research that I learned from all these years of being a journalist.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of comments have you gotten from readers with disabilities?
I haven't gotten anything negative. No one who's like disabled has said you got it wrong, so I feel good about that. I think the majority of readers are surprisingly in the romance category, and gay romance are straight women. They like to read about gay men in a fantasy way. And the majority of books in this genre, which I kind of fell into because I realized it was primarily about the relationship, so I called it a romance. There's a very strict template that, you know, it's the firefighter who meets the construction worker, and they're kind of like G.I. Joe dolls that fit into a romance template where something bad happens and then it's resolved. Or, you know, and specifically also in disability literature, straight and gay, there are things that people – I read a lot of these books, like the romance novels, the wounded warrior subgenre, they call it, where the woman heals the guy who comes back from the war. And it's really trite, and they get it wrong so often. So I did a lot of talking with my disabled friends and did a lot of research and actually looked up medical books and the history of disability, and I really wanted to get things right. You know, it's set in the early 1980s before the Americans with Disabilities Act, so there were numerous
Yes.
impediments at Penn State, where Everett goes, although Temple University, where Reed goes, there were a lot of advances. So it was fascinating to go to these university libraries and download the student newspaper and
Right.
look up everything in disability.
Mm-hmm.
And just find out what really happened. And that led to certain plot moments that I had already planned while I was kind of half writing it. But it also helped me realize that this actually could have happened here in Philadelphia in the early 1980s.
Right.
Yeah. So it fascinated me as a viewer and a researcher. And then applying it to the fictional story was a lot of fun.
Why did you pick the 1980s and why Philadelphia? I mean, is that about the time you came of age? Or
yeah. Chronologically, I'm as old as these two boys. They were 18 in 1979/1980. So I felt comfortable with that reality as my base, particularly with all the pop culture references. The two books are titled after songs that were favorites of mine. So then I could make up all this other stuff that didn't really happen to me, but I knew, oh, Cyndi Lauper was this popular at that time, and then it turns out, oh, she performed at a student festival at Penn State in 1983. Boom. So I got to put that in there and know which songs she would have composed by then. So I had a sense of like these kind of pop culture moments where I felt comfortable to make stuff up balanced with the reality.
Well, that's great. So actually, and music is important in these books and to the characters. We have a little bit every time I think of you, is it the title song of the song the title
yeah.
book the book is titled after?
Yes.
Named after. Tell us about this particular version. This is on your trailer, and I'd never heard
yeah.
of, I didn't know books have trailers.
I know.
What?
I know. I didn't know either until I fell into it. It's like, oh my God, let's do this. There's a moment where the boys are driving through the pit tunnel to Pittsburgh, and they decide on a song and they blast the radio because they're going to Pittsburgh to spend the night together. And
which is where one of the sisters lives, right?
Yeah,
right.
Everett's sister. And the Babies, Every Time I Think of You comes on and they start singing along and it becomes, quote, their song. So I asked my friend Eric Hyman, a wonderful musician who's frequently come to town, to do, hey, can you do an acoustic version of this song? And he wasn't even born when the song came out and he just went for it.
Okay, so right before we played, I just wanted to let you know, if you heard Jim read a few minutes ago, this book and the sequel to it, Every Time I Think of You and the sequel, Message of Love, are available for a donation contribution to KALW at this point of $120. We are in our spring drive. It's about growing this station, growing this community asset. The number is 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. You can dial while you listen to Every Time I Think of You.
Now the reason we're here as men together is to love each other, take care of each other. When love walks in the room, everybody stand up. All good, good, like busy band of. Look at the people in the streets, in the bars. We're all of us in the gutter, but some of us are looking at the stars.
Well, actually, a little mistake there. That was actually Message of Love we played instead of Every Time I Think of You, but that's okay. We'll play Every Time I Think of You later. They're very closely related.
Yes.
So tell us now, and we're going to read a passage from Message of Love next anyway. Tell us about, I've only read a little bit of that. I read the whole thing Every Time I Think of You. It didn't have as much time as I wanted to. I want to finish Message of Love, but I've just read the first couple of chapters. Mm-hmm. So don't give it away for me, for gosh sakes.
No, but
it seems like there's some time has passed, and they're in college now.
Yeah.
So, just to like set that up for us a little bit.
It's really about them figuring out how to stay in love.
With the challenges that I suppose especially Reed is facing now, the narrator, with this man he's in love with who is paralyzed from the waist down, right?
Yeah, but that's not the worst problem. That becomes the least. That's the thing that surprised me writing it, is that Everett was tough. Even though he's wealthy, he realizes that he's a minority. He comes very self-aware about becoming oppressed, that he's spent a life of privilege, and then his life turns around. He gets to go to the fancy school eventually, Penn State, while Reed stays at Temple. But it's about how they stay together. How can we stay together when we're separated just across town? Philadelphia became very metaphoric to me. Pennsylvania, again, it's like they wanted to be on the other side of it. But also it just fit naturally that they would go to these schools for their prospective majors. So there was logic at the same time. But they're in the dorm together, but then the mother interferes and says, no, my son's too smart for this commuter school. She's expecting
a little more out of her child.
Yeah, and I'm kind of covering a mistake because I shouldn't have done that. I should have, you know, it would have made sense. But they want to be together. They allow that, and then it changes, and then they have this crosstown romance where, are you coming to my dorm tonight? Am I coming to yours? And all these other guys in the dorms are like, are you his nurse or something? What is going on? And they have to decide how to come out and who to come out to. You know, it wasn't that easy to do that then, and I remember that. You came out to some people, but there'd be another person down the hall that you didn't. They were people, as Everett calls, who don't matter. Mm-hmm. So you don't come out to them.
Right.
So
1980 was a very different time, obviously.
Yeah, and they go into that, and then they find a place together, spoiler. And it makes the relationship better, but also a little bit more different. So it's domestic, you know,
right.
So there's that. But a lot of things gradually encroach on their lives that make things force them to face their fidelity, force them to face what they mean to each other. And it's a different definition of relationships, I think, than the modern romance, which enforces a code of monogamy, of consistency. So they're young boys. They're early 20s. So
let's hear a passage from Message of Love.
This is a very light moment that I just love. I'm actually going. I arranged a reading at Giovanni's room in Philadelphia, where I read 3 years ago or four. Philadelphia means a lot to me, and Giovanni's room was actually around then, 30 years ago. So I set a short scene where the boys go looking for. They're having a few problems with their relationship. So
tell our listeners what Giovanni's room is first.
Giovanni's room is the oldest gay bookstore in the world. And they closed down briefly, and then they merged with Philly AIDS Thrift as a thrift store nonprofit to keep it alive, and they're back. But it's very historic. I've read there three different times when I've been back to the East Coast. So the boys realize, hey, there's a gay bookstore. Let's go. And they realize that they want to get something other than their textbooks. So this is just a little moment in the before it was even called the Gayberhood.
Okay.
Actually, that's what's funny. The door to Giovanni's room had two cement steps, so I opened the door, then backed Everett's chair up and into the bookstore. A friendly, bald, older man with an earring asked if we needed any help. We're fine, I said, as Everett turned and took the place in. I can get you something from upstairs, he offered. Thanks, Everett smiled. We'll just look around first. It looked like a home converted into a store, like many in the historic neighborhood. A few of the aisles were a little tight, so I brought him a few books he couldn't reach. The array of titles overwhelmed me at first, books with shirtless men on the covers, lesbian health books, and further off an entire shelf of porn magazines. "Check this out," Everett handed me a large paperback with large curling letters on the cover. "The Joy of Gay Sex? I figured we could use a few pointers. An intimate guide for gay men to the pleasure of a gay lifestyle. Wait, does it include decorating tips?" I flipped through it, opening it to a page with a drawing of two guys going at it in an entirely unfamiliar position. The chapter heading read, "Fisting." Whoa. I handed the book back to him. "Prude." He perused it as if it were a textbook. "Do you have any complaints?" I muttered. "No, it's just, you know, we do have challenges." "Yeah, but it's what I want for my birthday." "Your birthday's in February." "Okay, then, an early Christmas present." "Fine." "Besides, I have a feeling you're going to enjoy this as much as I will." The eager clerk appeared before us. "You sure you gentlemen don't need any help?" "He needs a little gay 101, Everett said as he handed the clerk the sex book, "and I need an owner's manual."
That's great.
Thanks.
That's Jim Provenzano reading from Message of Love. It's the sequel to Every Time I Think of You. I'm Eric Jansen. You're listening to Out in the Bay on KALW. That's right, KALW, which gave Out in the Bay a chance a decade ago and has helped grow Out in the Bay. Tonight is the only Thursday night, the only airing of Out in the Bay during KALW's short spring membership drive. You can help grow KALW and grow Out in the Bay by becoming a member or making an additional donation. If you contribute $120, we'll thank you with both of these books.
Yes.
Every Time I Think of You and Message of Love, autographed by the author Jim Provenzano. And in fact, if you're the first person to call, he will personalize the inscription
yes.
to you.
Make little cartoons.
The phone number is 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. Or go online to KALW.org. If you already have the first book in this two-book series, Every Time I Think of You, we can send you his earlier book, Pins, instead. So you'll still get both. Pins is about the wrestlers. And let us know that by putting it in the comments section if you donate online or tell the volunteer who takes your phone call. Again, the number is 800-525-9917, 800-KALW-917. Also, we have a special challenge tonight. Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Portola Valley have offered an additional $100 for each new member during this hour, up to a total of $500 each new member. So if you're not a KALW member yet, you've been thinking about it, this is a great time to do it because at any level, it'll bring an extra $100 into KALW, and we will appreciate it so much. Every Time I Think of You won a Lambda Literary Award for Gay Romance in 2012. Message of Love is a finalist in the same category this year, so get some award-winning books. So I want to just ask you about some of the other themes here. Let me give the phone number one more time. 800-525-9917 or online, KALW.org. The themes in this book, we've talked about physical ability and disability and class differences to some extent. Nature also figures really huge in here.
Both covers are made to resemble field guides, which I bought in abundance because I don't know. I can't tell an oak from a pine some days.
And Reed is studying forestry.
He's a forestry major, and he becomes a student park ranger in one of the books, and then he works in Fairmont Park for a summer in Philadelphia. Yeah, it's such an obvious metaphor about trees growing, but there actually is an evergreen plant in the book. The little leaf on the cover of Message of Love is an actual thing that is in the book. So that's why I put them together. Also, the songs are mentioned and referenced and played at pivotal moments in each of the books. So I like weaving these things together. I didn't want to have another kind of generic two hot shirtless guys on the cover. You know, every romance, gay romance has that, and I didn't want to do that. And also,
and it doesn't make you think it's really a romance.
No.
Because I get these things from I won't say which press.
Right.
And it's like, oh, this is the romance novel? I can't tell the difference between this and the erotica.
Erotica, yeah. And it's like there's a lot of sex in the book. I mean, there's a lot. But each sex scene furthers the relationship or changes it some way, and that's how I write those. I write them where they're character development, like, you know, they actually do something. But yeah, plants specifically, the Latin verbs, I immersed myself in the metaphor, and then it became an actual thing. There are flowers in every chapter most of the chapters that represent someone or something specifically, but they're also there.
Now, you mentioned earlier that, most of your novels. I haven't read them all. I don't know about all of them, but they're pretty much all about gay men and the gay male experience, right?
Yeah,
but you
sure.
said earlier that a lot of straight women read them. And how do you know this? And
did you know that from the beginning? They're enthusiastic reviewers. There are many women who write them now, and they have very different interpretations. But some of them are really good and some of them aren't. But no, women like to read gay men stuff in abundance. I mean, they're really devoted. When they like you, they go and read all your books. And I get little reviews on Amazon and Goodreads, and they go, oh, I can't wait to read your other. I go, well, be careful, because it's not like the other one. You know,
okay.
They think they're going to get the same thing, and I like to do very different books each
mm-hmm.
time, even though they're all gay male fiction.
Right. Okay. We've got just a few minutes left. I want to know a little bit about your other work. You're the bar tab editor and for the BAR newspaper, the Bay Area Reporter, the gay newspaper in town, and I shouldn't say the gay newspaper, the weekly gay newspaper in town.
Yes.
There's a bi-weekly one as well, Bay Times. And you were the sports writer before that for a long time.
For 10
years. Obviously sports is in your background.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how much. I didn't realize you were a wrestler before.
Yeah, I wrestled about 14 years, and then I joined a track team, San Francisco Track and Field Club, went to gay games, competed. It was great. It was great to cover the community when I was freelancing that. It was also syndicated because it was helping to represent a healthy, burgeoning community that has since exploded. And, you know, I still deal with those themes in some of my fiction work, but I love those people, and I miss covering them because there was so much diversity within the ranks and different kinds of people. Like, you know, a water polo player is very different than a distance runner. So, like, when I made Reed a distance runner, I knew what kind of person he would be.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
As opposed to a sprinter.
Yeah. Or a weight man in a track team is mm-hmm. different than a hurdler. So, you know, different people become that. I don't know if, you know, one follows the other, but it's easy. It's fun to do that, to see that. And I just really enjoy covering that. But now it's like we've expanded the paper. I had to do some other things. I returned full time with the BAR in 2006. So, mm-hmm. And I got an award, so I was like, hey, 10 years, that's enough. Bye, thanks.
But now you're doing the bar tab section, which is about the bar scene and
nightlife.
About entertainment in general, nightlife.
Yeah, yeah, cabaret shows.
What do you like best and hate most about that?
What I hate most is that some of them don't know how to send a press release, so they send you a message on Facebook. What I love
don't
most is that there is so
I
much.
I get those too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, honey, it's called email. I know it's a little antiquated, but what I love is that there is a vibrant community. We write about bars closing. We write about Marlene is closing, but we write about Oasis opening.
Yeah.
And they're adding so many cabaret acts. You had your party there 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's thanks for coming, by the way. It was a blast.
Oh,
and
my
thanks
gosh.
To Oasis for
hosting
us.
And it's a comfortable space for performers, and they treat the performers professionally because Darcy and Heclina are performers. So it's great to see a live act that is worth writing about. So I have fun doing that and assigning writers and photographers to cover our nightlife community and all its fun diversity.
Okay. Jim Provenzano, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to, first of all, give your blog spot so people can find information about you and your blog.
Oh, jimprovenzanoblogspot.com.
That's easy. Jim Provenzano
at
blogspot.com, as long as you can spell Provenzano. But
it's phonetic.
It's phonetic. We are going to play one last piece. Instead of our theme song, as we go out, we're going to play Every Time I Think of You, which is... performed by Eric Hyman, which we meant to play before, my mistake.
The other one was Dudley Saunders.
And it'll be sort of low under while I tell you that, again, you can get both of these books, Message of Love and Every Time I Think of You, for a $120 donation to KALW by calling 800-525-9917 or going online to kalw.org. Easy way to remember that phone number, our call letters, and our frequency, 800-KALW-917. And we have a special challenge grant from Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Portola Valley, very generous and proud Out in the Bay supporters. They for every new member, they are chipping in $100 during this hour, up to five new members. So take advantage of that, please, and help grow this station. 800-525-9917 or online at kalw.org. You've been listening to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. Heard Thursdays at 7 o'clock Pacific time on KALW.org worldwide and at 91.7 FM in the Bay Area. Anytime you want on our website, outinthebay.org, where you can find a year's worth of archives and hear some of our favorites. Thanks very much to KALW for studio use and airtime, and this week's engineer, Joanne Marr. We'd love to hear from you. Write to us, marilyn@outinthebay.com, eric@outinthebay.com. But most importantly, call us now, 800-525-9917, or online, kalw.org. Jim will sign a book for you.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thought you understood. People say you love.